Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rebook, the show where we talk about the big, meaty men and women who be slapping all the meat and the stories they tell in the process, brother. I'm the man on the buttons, a.k.a. GB. You have the drama king, TNA's Matt Raywald, in the flesh and joining us in his triumphant return yet again. You know him, you love him, he is Jake the Brain Bannon.
Yeet.
Oh, the Batista.
We got the Batista.
And he even got the pyro, too. That's, Shauna's definitely not cleaning that up. That is definitely going to be a huge problem.
No, she's going to be upset about it.
Very much.
Yes. And then the cats.
Worth it.
Then the cats peeing.
It was worth it.
welcome back, Jake. Good to have you home at Rebook, bud. How's everything been? And how is it watching wrestling in 480p in Alabama?
Listen, we have HD.
I'm kidding.
My dad doesn't, but we do.
The people. Yeah.
It's been a hell of 2 weeks. Had some family matters to attend to, and not the fun kind with the, you know, reruns and did I do that's and all that. But I'm back now. Things are, knock on wood, stable for the time being. Looking a little hopeful. I don't like to use that term too much because that's when the rug comes out.
But, yeah, I understand that.
But I have been watching the podcast. I'm sad to say you have not skipped a beat. I'm happy to finally be back.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have you back, bud. And I'm sure all of the listeners and stuff are going to be really stoked.
The crowd goes mild.
Oh, the crowd is going so mild right now. Let us know in the comments down below how mild you are for Jake.
Okay. Man, is the Riyadh crowd listening?
Is the Riyadh crowd? Hey, guys, this episode we're talking about a lot of things, but overall, been a wild week for pro wrestling across WWE, TNA, and AEW. So we'll be covering all that stuff and more. And Jake, again, you know, it's a pleasure to have you back here with us. So, as we always like to do, we like to start with some fan comments. Make sure, though, that you subscribe if you are a YouTube enjoyer, or you can follow us across all the social media platform garbage at www.rebookpod.com. There you can just click on one of the links that takes you to where your preferred social media platform may be. I don't think X. Do we even have that one listed on there? I don't know. How's
I don't know. It exists there.
It exists. How's Elon's little I shouldn't say use those words at the same time, given his history. So in any case there, go ahead, click on the links and have fun. We of course like to look at some of the comments you guys left. One comment in particular that was left by an astute listener of the show, one Jake Bennett. Likes to say that the him being nominated for the 24/7 championship and losing is akin to the Blue Thunderbomb. Jake, you are the Blue Thunderbomb of Rebook. How's that? I gotta say, that's an achievement, you know, because the Blue Thunderbomb's an awesome move that does nothing.
Hey, just like the Blue Thunderbomb, I am pretty but useless.
Come on. No, we just had this discussion in our Discord, which you should join. It won twice last year.
It did.
It won two times.
You know what? I feel the same way. I think I won maybe twice last year.
Oh, Jake. I'm just messing around.
Two times.
Dude, that was a funny one, though. It is such a nice move, though. Oh, it's such a
it
good
is.
One.
That's what's such a bummer. It looks so good.
Like, it
and
should
it just
end your life.
Never...
You know, and every time it's just like a nice little nap. We also had another comment coming in. This one, at the time, would have been brilliant. But we're going to use this to pivot into our Royal Rumble conversation, because young Odo 1994 said, to add to Scan, and also shout out to Scan, who was awesome with his predictions and input for the last episode as well. To add to Scan's point about Oba winning the Rumble, there's already a story there with Drew ruined Oba's match with Cody. And, you know, you could see where the storyline points were clearly present for Oba Femi. So let's go ahead and pivot this into what the hell happened at Oba Femi with Oba Femi at the Rumble. Holy, I mean, let's just get preliminary thoughts out there out of the gate. What did we think about the Rumble in general? Because if our viewers are seeing this Oba Femi narrative connection that can happen, that could have been fun to kind of pull a string with, still can. Right. Don't get me wrong. Still can. You know, like, I guess, did the Rumble live up to that expectation, you know, of like good narrative storyline building, given that you had options, but they went in different directions? What do you think, Matt?
I mean, I'm not pressed about the Oba thing.
Really? You're not?
I thought it was.
Yeah. Do you thought Oba was
fine?
Fine. Okay. Yeah,
which I do agree, though, I guess you probably should have been better than fine. You would think you'd be pretty confident in what you have in someone like that. So, like, go ahead and take the shot, make him now. I don't think he had to win. Don't get me wrong. I don't necessarily even think he should have. But he could have had a little bit more of it. He had a good performance. He eliminated a bunch of people like right away, but then kind of just fell to the little bit to the way, and then yeah. He was eliminated by Brock, right?
Yeah. So that's the thing. There was, tell me if I'm wrong here, but it did feel like there was just a lot of weird timed things in the match.
Yeah, a little bit.
And you, as one of the only people in this call who has actually been in a Royal Rumble match. Sure. I'm curious to get your perspective on it, because there I'm sorry, Jake. You were actually the
Some mighty bold presumptions.
We're
going to
find out Jake actually was like Doink the Clown one time and was actually in the Royal Rumble. Matt, curious on your input on this, just because it did in relation to Oba Femi and even in relation to Brock Lesnar's elimination as well.
Well, that one even more so,
yeah.
Because it happened during Jey Uso's admittedly extremely long entrance.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if they had just kind of gone into the spot of what and the kind of the train was out of the station, and they were like, "What the hell, Jey? We figured he'd be in here by now," kind of thing.
Yeah,
and it just so it's like, all right, I don't know.
I really am curious. Like, there had to have been a producer in the back. She's like, hurry the freak up, Jake. Oh, my God.
Or trying to be like, guys, tell them to hold. Tell them to
or
wait
that,
until he's in there. You wait to the for the elimination. Because, it seemed kind of unceremonious for someone, the like him or not, the kind of stature of Brock Lesnar that's been built up in WWE over the years.
Yeah.
That said, I mean, video packages can save you from 1,000 different cuts. So, like, they could put something together. But even the Oba elimination.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, there he goes. Oh, boy, Brock threw him out. I thought there would have been more of a moment
Maybe. Yeah. But it was more of like he was opportunistic with eliminating Oba. It wasn't a.
Yeah.
Which
well,
I'm
I know.
Okay with,
I know.
You know,
but
I'm okay with two, but it didn't even feel like there was really a good build to that. I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't feel like there was much made out of it. More, at least not as much. And maybe they didn't want to, though, because I think a lot of us were like, ooh, we were all talking in our chat, like, oh, maybe Brock Oba at Mania? Is that what we're, but then, no.
Yeah.
Like, it maybe they're
and Monday Night Raw even made that more confusing. If I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, if they're not going there, then fine. And I guess everything was fine with them. But
I don't know.
So
let's start from the beginning, because I think, like, the beginning is also very important. Because I will say, like, the tone changed for me completely when Bron Breakker was coming out. when he was making his way out, I was like, oh man, this is a hype way to start this match. What a fun way to really show you the future of your company, but more importantly, to just give these guys an outlet to do some really cool shit, even if it doesn't lead to anything, even if it's like maybe they double eliminate each other, maybe, you know, it could have been something to that effect, like whatever. But instead, what ended up happening was you just got Bron Breakker just getting curb stomped by another masked man, and I'm not like, I'm okay.
Have you seen the movie The Other Guys?
The one with Will Ferrell and
Marky Mark.
Yeah, that's right. The Funky Bunch.
Aim for the Bushes.
For the Bushes.
That's what the whole beginning of the Men's Royal Rumble was like.
Yeah.
Where Samuel L. Jackson and The Rock have this badass scene. They're like, let's jump off this building into these bushes. And then they just die. That's how the beginning of the Royal Rumble felt.
Like here we go.
Yeah, it's like, oh shit. Oh. Right?
Okay. I'm not alone in feeling. No. Okay. Cause dude, I was watching it with a group of people. And everyone was like, why would they do that? That was like the people who do not understand professional wrestling were saying, yeah, why would they do that? Why would they do all of this and then do that? And I'm like, that is a great question that I wish I could answer to you. But the only thing I could say is, I don't know if they know what to do with this storyline right now, with these characters, with the vision, with all of this. And also, I want to note too, this isn't like necessarily that big of an inconsistency, but it is one worth noting. Paul Heyman walked out with Brock too. When did that happen?
What do you mean?
Like when did they reconcile after the triple threat match? Because I know that they teamed together, but that seemed like more he was calling Brock and not... It felt like there was still an issue between, unless I'm missing something, it felt like there was still an unresolved issue between Heyman and Lesnar because of that triple threat. They teamed together, or he brought him in because they...
What triple threat?
Not the triple threat. I keep thinking Brock was in the triple threat. It was not in the triple threat. I keep thinking about Rollins in that one. All right. So ignore that part. But regardless, I still do want to understand when did Brock and... Heyman kind of reconcile, because I did miss that, like, just for me, for my own knowledge.
Was there ever beef?
Yeah, I mean, they split up.
Yeah, but like, I always
he chose Roman over Brock.
Yeah,
I thought that was reconciled a long time ago.
But why would Brock need Heyman to walk out with him? I guess is like,
does it because they're a package deal?
I get it. It's just stuff like that that just kind of like bugs me as a fan of the nerdy aspect of it. I understand.
Like,
it's like
he chose Roman over Brock like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But then I thought they have been, because he also then didn't he bring Brock like
he brought him
fray?
In for the War Games match. Right.
Yeah.
But then it felt like it was more, hey, I still hate you, but I'm going to do this for you.
That's
because,
the vibe I got.
Right.
Too.
OK. So I'm not crazy in that. And then. Fast forward now, and then Brock's walking out with him on the Royal Rumble, like all proud and stuff. Again, it's fine because everyone loves Brock and Paul Heyman. Like I love that pairing. No doubt in my mind, it's always fun to watch on my screen.
It's a narrative inconsistency.
It's just an inconsistency where I'm like, what was the point of this? Because what? Your boy ends up getting attacked by a masked man out of nowhere, and now you're more into walking out with Brock, and then also Bronson Reed came out and he didn't walk out with Bronson Reed. So it was like, you know what I mean? Like it's hard for me to be invested in the vision when the vision's not invested in the vision. You know?
It feels like a lot of
they don't have any vision for the vision.
For the vision.
Yeah.
It feels like a lot of plates spinning and we're just trying to keep it rolling.
And that's what this Rumble felt like. This Rumble felt like everyone was spinning plates, waiting for something to happen, and then Roman Reigns won.
To make one, the men's Rumble felt.
The men's Rumble. Yes. Need to be very clear, because the women's Rumble absolutely slapped. But the men's Rumble did feel like that to me. What do we think of Roman winning? Was that the right call? And also the Gunther of it all in this situation.
It's, I go back and forth on it. I said it in our, we did a reaction short to it. There is a little bit of that, like, sentiment of LOL Roman wins, you know, like the old Cena wins meme. Yeah. Cause he's been on top for a decade plus and everything. But I did say this would be the first time you finally, people are into Roman, like, organically as a character and as a, like, tweener babyface. So he'd be, for the first time ever, going into a WrestleMania title match, not main event, because I guess last year the three-way was a main event, but non-title, into a WrestleMania title match main event as an organic babyface, which is what they've wanted for 12 years now. So that is a neat opportunity. And to go and listening to the prompt, like, it very much was a, well, sure, it'll always work. He's a top guy. He's good at what he does. He's got the presence. He's got the aura. And then I'll give him the promo on Raw with Punk. There's good beef there. There's good history and heat there. I'm sure we'll be.
Some are calling it his greatest promo of all time. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, the bar is kind of, I don't want to say in hell, but the bar is not, like, not a tough one to clear.
Yeah,
he's never
that.
Been the promo guy. He's had Heyman.
This is very
he
true.
Comes out, stands still, looks handsome as fuck, and then beats people up.
Yeah.
And, you know, his best stuff was during the Bloodline, kind of having a little bit of fun, the Sami Zayn stuff. He was loose and he was enjoying it and still a badass. So it was one of his better ones.
There was,
though,
like,
for sure.
There was that one promo where he was like, this is my camera, this is my show.
Yeah.
I think that was probably.
Yeah, he's had some pretty good ones.
Yeah. Now, and look, I do like the prospect of him fighting CM Punk. I think that's really good. I also think, I was telling this to my friend Wyatt, we were watching the Rumble together. Well, as soon as Roman won, he was like, why would he fight Drew? And I was like, he's not going to fight Drew. He's going to fight Punk because that's the more marquee matchup. Like, they want to get the World Heavyweight title is very clearly like the 1A belt right now. So they're really putting a lot of emphasis into it. And also would not be shocked if they're looking to run back to Triple Threat again and Seth Rollins gets interjected into this title picture somehow, some way, if he's cleared in time, which that is a who I don't think so, but we'll find out maybe.
I can see him if maybe being there, or maybe he gets cleared soon and then after post-Mania.
Could also maybe be a special guest referee, you know, in
something
the matchup
like that,
is a very strong possibility. So, you know, like I think that there's Seth Rollins is going to be involved in this some way, shape, and form, Jake, because I do feel like this is going to be a callback to last year's WrestleMania in Las Vegas where they did the same thing. What do you think?
But then,
sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I think you're right. I like the idea. If he's not medically cleared, I do like the idea of him being a special guest referee because, I mean, when you hate both people equally, you're going to call that one pretty down the middle. So, yeah. I mean,
Shawn Michaels
I think that would actually, yeah, exactly. Know? So I think that could be, I think that could be really interesting. Maybe even if it was like, you know, he's got whoever wins after. So, like, it could be some kind of is he going to call it down the middle or is he going to pick who he wants to fight kind of in the way he calls this match? You know, something like that, I think, could be a lot of fun.
I agree, but actually.
The men's Rumble, honestly, the Rumble as a whole, I'm going to kind of steal a bit here from Mitch Hedberg, but the whole Rumble and the men's Rumble felt like a stack of pancakes.
Okay.
Like you start out first bite, you're like, damn, these pancakes are good. Right?
Yeah.
But it's a law of diminishing return with pancakes. That first bite hits, and by the end, you're like, I'm so tired of these damn pancakes. Like, what? Why did I do this? That's a little how the men's Rumble felt. And honestly, the Rumble's whole, I think it started off great and then just kind of was like, you know, a little soggy in the middle. And then by the end, you were like, I don't even want to finish what's on this plate is a little how it all felt to me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that I was just more or less confused by some of the decisions and the choices of who got rid of who, but also like how those interactions played out. And I think, Matt, I know you wanted to say something, so I'll wrap up real quick. I was just going to say, like, it did just feel like it was a bit more like, just get out there and get it done, and then we'll just get as much as we can, do your big spots, and then Roman wins, yay. And like, that was it. I don't know. It being Gunther-Roman at the end even was, like, exciting because Gunther and Roman had never fought each other like that before. So that was an exciting moment to see. But Gunther was injured, and that was a good precedent set from the calf crusher and the match and stuff. And, you know, again, like, I have issues with just Gunther being in it all together, but it's like him being 30 and then him being limped. It's like, okay, unless you pivot this or you use that into like Roman wins a championship, and then Gunther's like, you're holding my belt, and also like, you beat me when I was weak, right? Like, I could beat you, like, then I'm okay with that. If that's where we're going, then give me that. But the problem is, sure, I just don't. We see the obvious storylines that get laid out, and yet they just seem to only go in the direction that, to be fair, and as understandable as a publicly traded company, is just like whatever's the big spectacle, like marquee thing. And even though I do think Gunther Roman is a spectacle marquee thing, want to be abundantly clear here.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah.
They just want to play things too safe lately.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know it's hard to say with a company who just went to Saudi Arabia, but I mean, they like storyline, they don't want to take any chances. They just don't. That's how it feels.
But then let's juxtapose that to the Women's Rumble, where I felt like they were taking chances and they were doing things and they were having fun with it. It felt like a complete tone shift of like just how they were telling their individual stories and also just the overall match. Obviously, they're different producers who produce different matches, and their styles probably, that's what we're probably noticing here more than anything. But I it does really strike me
the
as
Women's
like,
Rumble, it just felt more thought out.
Yeah, it did.
It felt more thought out. Because like, it feels like all the matchups that you kind of wanted to see with women, because when you go into the Rumble, there are those moments where you're like, oh man, what if this person comes face to face with this one? I loved the idea of Alexa and Charlotte starting out 1 and 2 in the Women's Rumble. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, then you had the stuff with Judgment Day going on and Liv eventually betraying Raquel, and that's propelled a whole other storyline. And like, it felt like there were so many threads that were picked. They were just kind of seamlessly picked up and handed off as different things happen within the Women's Rumble. And then it feels like the Men's Rumble, like they had some ideas and then they just did not know how to finish them. Like the stuff with Oba is like, okay, let's have him throw out the first six people in the match. And then he disappears. It just was, you know, things like that. And why,
like, why do you have Iron Man it or give him the elimination, like close to the elimination record or something like that? You don't have to break it. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, or at least have him thrown out by everybody. But then, like, you don't even have Oba or Roman or, I mean, insert any other people that you wanted to see in the ring with Roman, because Roman came out so much later after. So you don't even see any of that.
Yeah.
So it's, and I know, like, that's kind of the nature and the spirit sometimes of the Rumble is like, okay, well, they drew the number and it's, and you know, they get to wherever they get, whatever. I understand that, but still, like, to not see like any of them in the, you know, Cody came out early, which I actually liked Cody coming out early.
Yeah.
I like stuff like that, but it just felt like it was just, they had these like ideas and no one tied them together with a thread.
Yeah. And what's fascinating is they have all these for a company that really enjoys spectacle, they really did avoid all the moments that could have given them a big spectacle, which I thought was quite fascinating. And I wonder if it was like, maybe they felt like they didn't want to use these things in Saudi Arabia, like in a Riyadh, a Royal Rumble, right? That could be a possibility, you know, like they didn't want to, use Roman and Oba's first encounter like this in Saudi Arabia. Maybe they want to save it for like SummerSlam or whatever bullshit. I don't know. I guess the thing is, to what you're point was Jake is like, yeah, it just felt like there were, they started off hot, great ideas, and then things just peter off. Like, for example, again, to go back to the Bron Breakker thing, that happened, and then we all just kind of like moved on from it, and then that was it. And yeah, obviously they Monday Night Raw and all that stuff, but like in the moment it just felt really bizarre. But I get it, that's the Rumble. I guess that's just the nature of the match. But it was just, I felt like you have the means to be able to control how this goes. It's just really weird that they elected not to leverage those opportunities where they saw fit, but then they did so for the women's. In spectacular fashion, and it was great. And then Liv Morgan wins, and now she.
Do you think that they feel like that they can get away with more when it comes to the men?
I think so.
Does that make sense? Like they feel like we can just turn the big boys loose, and they'll and just their names and how whatever that'll bring viewers, and then they feel like they have to kind of micromanage the women.
Maybe to a degree. I mean, it's as cavalier as that.
No, I don't think it is either. I'm not doing a great job of explaining, but like, yeah.
You're just explaining from a producer's perspective where you're just like,
right.
Hey.
That it just kind of feels like, yeah. Like, oh, we'll just put fucking Roman out there. That'll, you know, whatever. It. And then, yeah. And then with the women, it's like, oh, let's put Charlotte and Alexa out there. Cause we've been teasing this and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It just, if, everything felt like it was done with more care and forethought.
Yeah, there was more intention.
Yeah. Yeah. Where it was just like, yeah, let's just the women's Rumble felt like they were telling a story, and the men's Rumble felt like I was watching someone do a Royal Rumble with their action figures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I feel like the women's Royal Rumble told a couple of couple of stories, big and small, and like things like Sol Ruka showing up, and yeah. She had a hell of a performance,
you
right?
Really did.
Mm-hmm. So people like her and Lash Legend.
Yeah, she was she was the runner up, right?
Yeah, and like her and Lash Legend were like the up and comers who had standout mm-hmm. performances. Okay, so we're making new people, Charlotte and Alexa. Are they going to work together? So they kind of toyed with that story. They did go back a little bit to Maxine and Becky. Liv, Raquel, all that stuff.
Yeah, yep.
And a little bit of Rhea, and they're of course keeping stories going. I mean, to be fair, Liv is also a safe choice. That wasn't exactly a like bold choice. She's been at the top of the women's division for years now.
But there's at least a story there.
And it was her first win. You know, it was her
right.
first
it was
Rumble
the one
win.
Thing she hadn't done yet. That is
also,
true.
She got to participate in this, which was a really funny just picture that I think overall oh, yeah. just exemplifies Chelsea why Chelsea Green is the greatest. Also, shout out to Alba Fire, who really just made history getting eliminated so many times in the Royal Rumble is truly something that no one has been able to accomplish. And dare I say, no one will ever be able to do again. Because she wasn't in the Rumble, which is what Michael Cole. I actually really enjoyed Cole on commentary, like all night. It was like him just constantly being like, "She's not in the Rumble, Wade. She's not in the Rumble." Like he just keeps saying it to him, and then Wade just like so hardcore in that direction. It was some funny moments.
Also, that picture is so sad. Where the fuck is the crowd?
Okay. Okay. They're there. I gotta, because look,
yes,
I am not Mr. WWE, but I will give them credit. They're there, but
it's a
where
weird
I will
with the lights.
Where I will mock them is that whatever shareholder told them to invest and use that lighting apparatus setup should be removed from their board. Whoever owns that company should just divest from it ASAP. Oh my God. Wow. What a horrendous
takes a lot
design.
For them to remove somebody from the board.
I know, but they should, because that is a horrendous design. Like I could not believe my eyes that someone, you have the stupid wristbands, man. Do the stupid wristbands. You get the same effect. the same exact effect. What they wanted was this consistent light spread across the seating because they weren't even sure if they were going to sell out the seats, right? Like, that's why you do that setup. A lot of events do it like that. It's quite common in live event production. So it's not like it's a bad thing, but it's also like, it just looks so bad. I'm sorry. This is my production nerd.
It almost looked like they saw the Intuit Dome.
But they also didn't sound.
And we're just like, let's just do bigger, more obnoxious, giant square light things. And so, yeah, we thought those were all empty seats. They weren't. You see videos and pictures from in the arena. It was full.
Yeah.
It was full. But, like, it just looked weird as hell on camera.
Yeah. It was a genuinely bad decision. Bad design decision. Bad investment decision. Whoever... Like, it's just bad. Like, don't do
those
again.
Somebody's gonna accidentally fall out a window about that.
Probably. Moving on to an idea that should have fallen out of the window, actually, is AJ Styles and this Gunther matchup. We talked about this, Matt, and we said, surely not. Surely not. Now, that being said, AJ Styles loses. And he looks like he's going to take the phenomenal gloves and put them in the middle of the ring. And he ends up picking them up and walking away. So, not retired.
We don't know.
Well,
yeah, we don't know.
We don't know for him in particular. Getting into the outside world of it all, we do know that I think he's done in February, right? This month. I think he's like... Is his contract or supposedly is up? Who knows how that works? I'm not going to pretend like I have any insight into that. That's just what I read on Fightful Select on Blue Sky. How do we feel about the match? I just want to say the match was brilliant. Like fantastic. Top to bottom, just masterclass. Like,
yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, AJ's still doing what he does best, and that's what he's always said, is that he wants to go out while he's still AJ Styles. So that's what makes me like thinking, like, look, I know AJ a little bit, and like he stands by what he says. So there's a very real output. It's like, hey, I'm gonna have one more. I'm good. It's my contract's done. When it's done, I'm not re-signing. I'm good here. Let's do it however we got to do it. Sure, let's put over Gunther. Let's build him up even more. And peace. I don't want to risk any more months of me slipping below that bar I've set for myself. So it could be that simple. Like I said, I always thought they would just hold out, even if it was just a month or two or something, until you could do some giant show in Atlanta, with his family and everything. But I don't know.
He's not retiring. I think that's just really what it is. It's just like, you're right. You would do that, right? Like, every retirement that we have seen for a high-profile wrestler has pretty much followed the same blueprint across the board, outside of, like, a few exceptions, you know? So I think it's safe to say, it's like, yeah, he went out there, did exactly what you said, put on a freaking banger match, made Gunther look like a superstar, and, all right, off you go. Now I'm going to go
win the
TNA world title one more time.
Well, hey,
that's all I want.
Stole my heart.
That's all I want.
that's kind of the question then. Like, one, so there's options here. It's either one, he's done. His contract's up. Like, he's done. He put Gunther over on his way out. And he didn't want fanfare and just said, I'm just going to finish and right off. And he's going to, maybe he'll work backstage eventually, but he's just going to go away. And so that's one. It's just, that's how it's happening. Two, it's a WWE story because he did the tease of, no, I'm not done yet. So maybe he does go away, gets his job back somehow, or maybe, and again, I cannot emphasize enough, I am not saying this with any insider information. I freaking wish maybe because of that partnership with TNA, maybe he does something and then like he gets his job back by running through his old territory and inspiring people and blah, blah, blah. And so they hire him back for one final run and it ends in a true, true retirement match. That's two. Or this isn't a story, but is this an Adam Copeland situation?
Yeah.
Where he said, "Yep, I'm done with my contract. Thank you so much. I'll put him over on my way out. One last match, and then I'm gonna explore my options." Well, and just
and
we'll
to
see. He can show up anywhere.
Or we're also forgetting the obvious. Maybe a mysterious third El Grande Americano appears.
El Phenomenal.
El Phenomenal.
Yes.
El Phenomenal Americano.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's exactly it.
I think like
Uno Phenomenal. Yeah.
I feel like the more likely possibility is that he's going to do what he did when he left TNA the first time, or when he left TNA years ago, and went to New Japan, and he like just went around and just had matches and just kind of showed everyone why he is AJ Styles and why he is one of the greatest to ever do it. And why, you know, I don't remember the whole story with him in TNA and what was happening at that time, but clearly my man wanted to prove to the world that he was worth every penny. And I would argue he proved it. I would say this could be a very similar situation, but in the opposite, where it's like him proving to himself that he could still do a couple more great matches and go out like AJ Styles, like the way that he wants to go out. There are great matches for him to have in other promotions. Frankie Kazarian is one of them, you know, in TNA. And also, too, just like anyone really in TNA with AJ Styles would be unfreaking believable. And it'd be an incredible shot in the arm for them, which I would love. But then alternatively, I wouldn't mind if he just rolled up to AEW just to do like three matches at like All In or some shit like that. You know, just one. It's just like, hey, this is like his last match against Kenny Omega or something like that, or Okada, because they're there, you know. So why wouldn't he want, if that's the, you know, prevailing theory, right? Like, you know, hey, you're going to go out there and have matches and classics and shit. Like, why not just do it? I don't know. Jake, what's your read? What do you think?
Man, I don't want it to be over.
I really don't too, man. Like, even talking about it, it's weird.
It does feel a little unceremonious. Perhaps that's the point. I don't know. This very much seems like a wait and see kind of situation of what did him putting the gloves back on? What did that mean?
Yeah.
Because it was obviously very, very intentional.
Yeah.
It was so. But we don't know what it means in regards to his future with WWE, but everybody seems to like be celebrating that. Like he's done.
This is like Matt could also be performance, right? Like could also be all part of the show.
Yeah, Matt could be full of shit too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, as we have known.
Matt could know far more than he's letting on.
That's right.
I'm the last person to know.
And I think that we should read between the lines when he talks.
Yeah, and then I think everyone should pick up this conversation and use it for their articles and then link directly to this video. That's what I think everyone should do. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Embed. Go for it.
But yeah, no, it to Jake's point, it did feel a little like they played into like the AJ retirement just enough to like, oh, this is going to be a big deal. He's going to put his career on the line. But the fact that it was kind of unceremonious on like this Saudi pay-per-view and stuff does kind of ring a little bit of, all right, you're deciding to leave after your deal is up a little bit. Like, you're AJ Styles. We can't just like job you out on a dark match on SmackDown. Like, we have to. But you would think if it was like, I am done, like Cena style, like never wrestling again, they would have done a little bit more pomp and circumstance.
I just agree.
A little bit.
I wholeheartedly agree.
So, yeah.
He's AJ Styles. Like, he is one of the most influential professional wrestlers of the modern era. I like, he is an incredible talent, but across multiple promotions, it would be, if this is his last match, like that's crazy.
And that's kind of how it felt with Edge, with Copeland. It was like all of a sudden they just kind of announced like his like last match ever in Toronto on SmackDown. Like it was kind of like on like a 2 or 3 week build or something, right? Yeah. Like, hey, yeah. That's going to be my last match, by the way. Anyway, I'm going to wrestle. Hey, Sheamus, I love you, buddy. Let's do it. Bye. And You're like, wait, he didn't get a pay-per-view? He didn't like wrestle Randy one more time and all that? Well, yeah. I guess he did years. But, you know, it didn't seem like there was as much pop and circumstances as you would have thought for Edge. So it could be.
He might not have wanted that, too.
That's of course possible, too. There's a lot more questions than there are answers.
Yeah, no, for sure. And also AJ's like a nice guy. So like, I don't know. I've worked with him a couple times, really, really chill dude. So like,
dude, that's my thing. Like literally he is the type of person. That's what I mean. I'm like, there's a chance, even though it doesn't make sense to us, like what, why aren't they doing this huge? He just goes, hell frick, man. I just want to go back and like, and watch my son play baseball, go fishing. Like he
the
is,
frick I'm, man I, is I, so I, him.
Dude, frick. He doesn't curse.
Yeah.
He is a well-trained Christian man.
Yeah. He really doesn't. But it's like, funny.
Yeah. But no, he would be literally happily just going back down to the house, watching his kid play ball and relaxing on weekend. Like he is that person who could just go, yep, I feel good. While I still feel good, I'm out.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. While I appreciate AJ's humility, I wish that he would hopefully acknowledge that we all want to celebrate him more, you know, and not parade him, but celebrate him. Because I think that's the important word here. We'll wrap up Royal Rumble real quick. Just give some quick thoughts on the Drew Sammy match. I just wanted to preface say like I didn't watch it because I knew exactly what was going to happen, and unfortunately that has kind of become the theme for a lot of Sami Zayn matches, which is like really frustrating. And I wish he was in the Royal Rumble, and I wish he would have won it. And that is my hot take. All right, I don't even know if it's a hot take, but that is my perspective. Thoughts on the match at all? Any thoughts that you guys want to share? Anything that felt like there could be a narrative string pulled, or did it really just feel like how I felt, cut and dry?
I feel like I'm call me coping, call it huffing the
okay,
sweet,
Adam
sweet
Copeland.
Copium of no, not that Copium. But I'm hoping. I'm still convinced that potentially in 2026, Sami Zayn will win a world title. And
I want to believe
we are
too.
At the beginning of the year, and I feel like this could be a really good long-term story across multiple feuds. So we went into this year, we were all like in December into the Rumble, Sami's really talking about winning the title, he's really hitting it home. Like, ooh, is this going to be his year? And then he gets right into a title match, which I thought would take longer. And then he loses. It was very I don't want to say cliche Sammy fashion, but a classic Sammy story. Underdog, kept kicking out. He's trying. He came back, but Drew just nailed the hammer into the coffin, right until he just couldn't go anymore. But the underdog kept trying. So I almost to your exact point, I'm hoping. I don't have a lot of faith, but God, am I hoping that like they're playing on that? Like, oh, LOL, Sammy loses. He comes close, but oh, Sammy can't quite get it done.
Yeah,
and it might happen one or two more times. And he has this journey of like, well, I can't I break out of this always the underdog, never, you know, always the bridesmaid, never the bride kind of bullshit. And he's going to have like a journey and a moment to do it. And then whether it's Mania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Saturday night's main event, 56, he has a journey that leads there and maybe does it. So I'm hoping this is part of like a much larger, not just with Drew, just like over the year, where it's like, hey, I was starting off on a new foot and it immediately got ripped from under him. And he has to really like, who am I? Dig down deep. Like,
yeah,
totally. I'm hoping.
I hope so too. It's just, it is the same story from the Intercontinental Championship, you know, just hopefully it's just given more air, more space, more time, you know, more opportunity for Sammy to kind of like.
But there, I would argue, because it is when he did the Intercontinental title thing with like Gunther, he had won the IC title before.
Mm, yeah.
So like you were dethroning the monster in Gunther, but here you have a precipice he has not ever, reached.
True. That is true. That is
so
true.
There is a little extra pressure and prestige and
that layer, momentum. That added layer does matter. Actually, you're totally right on that one. Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. Jake, I will say though, you know, to the point of Matt was saying, it does feel like this is just, you know, a very similar story. Will people be as invested as, you know, in yet another Sami Zayn underdog story? I think so, because as
I think
to Matt's
they will.
Point, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they will. I mean, he's so beloved, like, by everybody.
Yeah.
And I just think everybody is willing to invest in and hope once again for Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
Like, I just, you know, I don't know what it is that's going to put him over the top, but he needs his George McFly punching Biff moment to like, to really put him over. I know it's making me think of it. But yeah, I just, he really needs that. He really needs that moment. And I think, yeah, I think we're all willing to go through it with him again because he's never been there.
Yeah.
And, we all want to go on that journey with him.
Yeah.
And I just, he's such a likable person. He's a likable character that, yeah, you can't help but want to go on that journey with him.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you book it,
they will come. They will come. Hey, you know what?
Yeah.
Look, we'll leave it there. There's a lot from Monday Night Raw as well. But I think like it all kind of, we got to wait to see how things pan out, right? We got Roman challenging Punk for the title. I take a lot of issue with the Obafemi War Raider squash match. I did not like that. Well, it wasn't even a match. That felt so like, hey, tag team wrestling doesn't matter. It just felt very like that to me, which stung as a fan of the division. But it is what it is. Oba looked awesome though.
At the same time, it is technically more impressive than it just being a squash with somebody we don't ever see much or some local talent.
No, I get it,
whatever.
But it's also like,
I get why that they did it, but it did feel a little disrespectful too.
And also like, why?
To them.
Why did Oba just come out and beat down two men for no reason? And then everyone's like, you know, like, that's a little of a bizarre thing to do if you are. Are War Raiders bad guys? Am I missing
Oba
something?
Femi is the destroyer.
I understand that. But does he do that to random people in NXT? Just come out and beat the shit out of like his coworkers on the roster, even though he's not scheduled in a match?
What are you talking about? This is what every wrestler since the beginning of time has ever done.
He wasn't scheduled in the match. He just walked out of a scheduled match. Okay, Adam Pearce needs to get his shit together.
I contend if they do your full entrance that you were supposed to be there.
And I don't disagree.
I don't think
that
is some.
But the commentary was saying, well, we were supposed to have a tag team match, an official tag team match, and that seemed to not happen. Oh my God, Obafemi is so great. Like, again, it's just too fucking inconsistent. Like, it's those little things that are just so annoying. Because now I'm just like, I love Obafemi, yes. But now I'm like, oh, what a dick move. Like actually, like, you just interrupted a matchup just so you could beat up some people and you weren't scheduled to be there, and then they did your full entrance?
Maybe he's going to be a heel.
I guess so. Maybe he's trying to tell us something. Maybe, hey, if that's where it goes, then I rescind everything I say. And then I'm okay with that. But I have
about
a feeling
sending a message.
So I don't disagree, but the one thing I will say, and this is kind of a cop out, I understand.
It's fine. It's like, wrestling. We can always cop out with wrestling.
I know, but it's one of those you're talking about it kind of things, because to Jake's point, we've seen every new debuting wrestler since the dawn of time come out, win a, if not a complete squash, at least like a 70-30 enhancement match with a lower tier talent or a local. Mm-hmm. So like he was just in the Rumble. Do we have to have him come out and pin somebody in 5 minutes? What's different? It's a little bit of throwing something at the wall, but I feel like this might've been a writer's room. Like, how about he just comes out and destroys a set of people?
But then,
because he's ready to fight.
He went out and destroyed former tag team champions.
Exactly. What's more impressive than that? Tag team champions, essentially, unfortunately, like them or not, are not featured a lot and are not on the tier. Yeah. You can tell. Yeah. I know. I've been that guy.
But that's why
that would have been the vaudevillains, brother.
Yeah.
You know what?
That's why I always take the WWE tag team caring about tag team arc to be such garbage.
It's always been an issue.
I never, ever, 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 ever want to hear anyone ever talk about WWE caring about tag team wrestling. I never want to see Triple H go and do one of his little press things where he's like, "What are we really doing about tag team wrestling?" Like, I don't want any of that shit.
It's a new era.
A new era. We care about tag team wrestling. By the way, talk to my friend RFK over here. Like, honestly, I just can't. Like, I don't know. I'm a fan of these people. It's just it does very much bother me, and it makes me not give a shit about your entire tag team division. Like, honestly, like
there's no doubt that, I mean,
what a bad call. Like, I it could have been any other tag team. You literally could have had them come out and squash the Americanos. That would have been a way better option.
But they were needed for the business later on.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Americano stuff.
It could have been literally anyone else.
But then I'll challenge you.
Garza, the Latinos that they think that freaking matters to them. Oh my God.
Like, I think sometimes it does because they weren't there. They probably didn't travel to them.
That is fair. Now that's a logistical thing. And I don't disagree with that. But what I'm saying is clearly, someone thought about, hey, let's just put our former tag team champions to get just messed up by this man for like 5 minutes. I just think it's like really.
And I don't know who else it would have been.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, it sounds like it's a problem with the company.
a little bit, but like it's a really tough place to be. And this is not something that was like, if they planned this 4 months ago, they could have had a certain tag team there. They did. I'm sure they didn't. I'm sure they were going to do something with Oba on Raw, but they didn't know what. So then like, if you didn't have any like enhancement tier talent, and we want to do something impressive, let's have him beat up two guys.
What was wrong, by the way? Where was it? It was in Saudi or was it
Philly?
Philly. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Saudi of America.
We don't have the list of who was on the ground in the locker room.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, ultimately, like, it's my opinion, you know, that's just how I felt, but it's fine.
So then, you've got a 5 minute segment to for Oba. Rebook it.
All right. I like it. Okay. So first things first, right? We got to set the tone for Oba Femi to the audience. We've already seen him be a destroyer. So why don't we pivot to something a little bit more informal? Maybe something a little bit more personal. Maybe like an interview on stage, either on the in the ring or at the top of the ramp itself, right? Just something either firstly to show the scope of the scale, right? Have him come out, have him do his entrance, have the audience do literally the same thing that they already did with him when he came out, because that's what you wanted, right? You wanted the dun dun hu, dun dun hu, and you wanted the audience to go oh bah, which they all did. So again, you could do all of that shit without besmirching your world tag team champions. So what you do instead, former world tag team champions. I guess it does matter, right? Because they're shit.
There's
now
a lot of people who won titles 4 years ago. You know what I mean?
I get it. Listen, I understand. It's how WWE does their business.
I'm not trying to shit on them.
I watch AEW and they do it a little bit differently, where they bring out an enhancement person and then they'll have them beat the crap out of them and then have them do an interview and then kind of dictate. Because see, here's the thing, right? The big angle for this particular moment was Oba Femi has not really declared himself or is not really in any show. So I would have gone with a more focused thing of talking to him about either A, where does he want to go? Who does he want to fight? Or maybe have Adam Pearce come out with a, hey, you know, we're going to schedule you for a match tonight and we're going to see, you know, like you do X, Y, and Z. There were a lot of different things they could have done besides squash their former world tag team champions. That's, I mean, you wanted to rebook it.
Sure.
I put my professor, my producer hat on and professor hat on and I rebooked it. What do you guys think?
I would have, yeah, I know. I would have loved to see you actually, you inspired a little bit of an idea there too. Like I would have loved to see, yeah. If we're highlighting the fact of like these NXT hot, you know, free agents, right, are coming up and we're playing the game of like Nick Aldis wants you on SmackDown. Adam Pearce wants you on Raw. Let's do the, it's really easy. Let's have them do the old thing. They're showing up to both shows, right?
Yeah.
They're sitting in the crowd. I normally don't like that, but maybe they are. And it's every week. It's Adam. Hey, Oba, before you go, we should talk, man. And Oba goes, I'll let you know. And he walks and he goes to SmackDown. So like they're hunting. Show how badly he's wanted. He's just showing up. He's watching the world champion.
Yeah.
He's watching the Intercontinental Champion.
This is the man
He's
who forfeited willingly match. His yeah. NXT Championship because literally no one could beat him. Like this man should have the pick of the litter. He should go wherever he wants because that's how it was for Asuka.
I want him to be kind of like Kraven the Hunter, where it's like he's just going. He's like, I'm just going after big game. You know what I mean? He's like, I'm the biggest and the baddest. And the way you prove you're the biggest and the baddest is to beat the biggest and the baddest. And that's what I'm out to do. Oh, yeah. There's two of them out in the ring right now who are the biggest and the baddest. I'm going to go murder them right now in front of everybody. I'm not going to tell you why you want me on your show. I'm going to show you why you want me on your show.
And a
local talent ain't going to do it. Throwing around Tozawa like a beach ball ain't going to do it. I'm going to go do it against two big bad motherfuckers. And the reason I think it worked there is because it wasn't an official match. They were caught off guard, right? So it wasn't thing like they were whatever. So I think for that reason, it worked. But I think this is Oba being like, I am a problem. I will be a problem wherever I decide to go.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, you know, I just like Oba's ready at all times.
Yeah, no,
Oba's working at all times.
I definitely don't disagree.
I just like that's the kind of attitude I want to continue to see from him of like he's not really a face, he's not really a heel. He's Oba.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he does what he does.
Yeah.
And what he does is rule the ring.
Yeah.
And I want to see more of it.
Yeah. I look again, Obafemi's amazing. Like he is genuinely like the reason why I am like watching WWE TV. Like I like him a lot. He has it. He is very charismatic. I like his whole gimmick. I like the whole walkout, the music in ring. He's phenomenal as well. Like the man is truly the total package. WWE like hit a home run with this guy and they have every right and every look. He's going to be successful no matter what he does. And I am a nitpicky little douchebag. But I do think though that the way that it was presented for me wasn't what I liked and how I would have looked at it or presented it. But to Jake's point, yeah, you know, like if this is the angle that they're running with, let's see where this goes. And I will like pull back judgment for right now. But man, if I was a world tag team champion and I was told at catering, hey, by the way, you're going to go out there and get your ass kicked by one guy in an unofficial match, I'd be a little bit bummed. Just because it's like, damn.
And then I'd probably see Obafemi and be like, yeah.
But then, right. But then you'd be like, hey, honestly though, I'd be like, that dude, big, black, and badass. Holy crap! You know, like what a man. So anyway, it is what it is.
I mean, my wife even said she was like, he makes Bobby Lashley look small.
Yeah, no,
like he just is. God, man. That guy. I mean, he's
a tank. He's a tank.
Mass
a big man.
Of humanity.
All right. Well, yeah. we spent a lot of time on this, and I do think it was an interesting discussion. Let us know in the comments down below. What did you think of like my assessment, Jake's assessment, Matt's assessment, like how we viewed this in three different angles? Actually, very, very curious, because that's kind of what the point of this show is all about. It's about rebooking things and talking about wrestling in different ways. So let us know what you think about that. I did want to move quickly into TNA. We did have some big things happening. The thing really that you got to focus on here, though, is that the former TNA International Champion, Steve Maclin, is no longer in TNA wrestling. And it, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but he has been removed from the roster page as well. Is that like...
I believe so.
Yeah. Now I don't know.
I want him to come back to work on Thursday like nothing happened.
And George Costanza actually, style?
Yes, because what I want is that I want it to come out that I want it to come out that Santino actually fired Steve McClain.
Yeah,
and
I did what you asked. I write on the forums.
I wrote it. Yeah, Stephen McClain. I wrote it on the. And then
I thought that nobody named Stephen McClain works here.
We don't have that guy on staff, man. Yeah. What? How would you firing him? That doesn't make sense. Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny. I actually would think that'd be hilarious. Yeah. I mean, look, Macklin's gone. I don't know. Feast or Fired is, it was just weird seeing the way people were talking about it, Matt. And they were like, this is a really bad way for someone to find out that they're fired. I'm like, oh, God, this is no way.
Yeah, there seem to be some people out there who legitimately think, now this has been used many times for like people who were leaving, right? Or, hey, we're not renewing your contract and stuff like that. So this is our way of writing you out.
Loser leaves town.
Nobody literally opened a briefcase live on TV and was like, oh,
damn.
And that was the first time they had ever heard about it. I can promise you.
That would have been some G4 shit. That's what that would have been.
But,
bro, dead ass, bro. Oh, you're so right. You're so right. Yeah. No, so just be clear, right? This is a part of the story. And this is just, I mean.
But again, it often does take
place
with real. You know, it'll often serve as a way to get somebody out of the company whose contract is up or not renewed or whatever.
It's a storyline device to cover for a real life contract situation.
Often, yes. Sometimes often. They use it as a straight up storyline device, like where the guy will go and come back right away and stuff like that. Keep watching. That's all I'll say.
So in any case, I don't think that Steve Maclin is fired. Or at least I hope not. I'm just going to be very honest because I really don't know where he would go. and I think he's got so much more to do in TNA. So I really don't see a... Now, yes, you could have made the same case for Ace Austin. You also could have the same argument for the Rascals, all three of them, all four of them, really, especially now with Trey Miguel having the X Division title shot. International title shot, excuse me. You know, so you clearly, like, you know, there's something here. So that's my assessment. Jake, is that your feeling as well with Steve Maclin, or do you think this is actually like legit? And of course we have to ignore
Matt. No, I think he's, I think there's a, I agree with you. I think that there's a lot left for him to do. I mean, he was the first champion of his name, of his kind, with that belt. And, I don't know. I think he seems like the kind of guy who, even in kayfabe, would be fired and still show up the next day and probably not be happy about it. so I could see something to that effect happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's always an interesting storyline. When something like this happens is how does someone, you know, crawl back?
Yeah.
Is there another, perhaps, In the manner that have several El Grande Americanos, could we have another hometown man?
That's what I'm saying. You know, Steve Maclin becomes the hometown man's cousin.
The hometown Mac.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah.
Hometown dude. Right. Hometown and kid. Then the hometown man, uh-huh. the hometown dude. And then you get the hometown, you get Eric Young to be the hometown guy. And and then everyone, they become the hometown team.
The homies.
They become the homies of the hometown team. You know, like one or the other. I say book it. Hey, Mr. Silver, yeah. please book it if you don't mind. Thank you
Get
very
Dreamer
much.
On the horn Get right Dreamer. Away.
Someone called Tommy. Matt, you got his number, right?
Yeah, he doesn't respond to me. It's okay.
He's a son of a bitch. No, he's probably out there just enjoying a soup. And in any case, yeah, look, Macklin is very much part of the core fabric, in my opinion, of TNA. So it'd be a real shame to see him gone. I do hope this is a storyline aspect, a storyline angle. We'll see. Keep your eyes peeled to TNA on AMC. You should be watching anyway because this it's been Thursday. Great. This Thursday. Yeah. It's been great, honestly.
More and more people are seemingly to watch it. Yeah. So I'm just saying, numbers are good.
People and are looking now Thursday, for alternatives.
Telling you. And now Thursday on AMC is... I think they call it Total Action Thursdays. They don't I saw an ad for it because Groundhog Day was on yesterday. You got to watch Groundhog Day. And it was cool seeing ads for Thursday Night Impact during Groundhog Day.
Yeah, pretty damn cool. And I'm telling you, people want alternatives. People are just they're hungry for alternatives. WWE brought a lot of people back in with that WrestleMania 40 storyline, and a lot of lapsed fans returned to wrestling and was like, oh, this is happening. And then there of those lapsed fans, a percentage of those individuals went and stuck with it. And then a percentage of those individuals either wanted to find other options, relapsed, or just moved, moved to like other options, but like it's there and it's great. And just watch pro wrestling. We grab the camera. Just watch pro wrestling. Damn it. It's the greatest form of entertainment. Anyway, for AEW, it has been a big week for them as well. We had the debut of Tommaso Ciampa in AEW. I really do feel like it's an excellent fit for him. It was exactly what the doctor ordered. Presentation wise, he looked fantastic. He looked like a badass. It very much felt like his old NXT.
The Black Hearts.
Yeah,
back.
The Black Hearts back, right? All that stuff. He came out. Mark Briscoe said he's tired of fighting people from the Don Callis family, wants to fight someone new. In comes Tommaso Ciampa. They have a match on Collision. Absolute banger. Worth watching it. And then he becomes a new TNT champion.
It's like AEW and WWE did a straight up one-for-one trade.
Yeah.
Ciampa for Hobbs.
Because we didn't even talk about Royce Keyes. Yeah.
And like, it kind of worked out for everybody, I think. Yeah. Like, I think everybody's exactly where they need to be.
Yeah.
Where they can do their best now. I'm happy for Ciampa. I've loved Ciampa. I wanted to see him make more of an impact on the main roster in WWE than he did. I love that he came in and just walked in and grabbed a title.
Yeah.
Right off the rip.
It's been a while since they've done anything like that. So that was kind of
refreshing.
And
again, he's got a banger entrance, a great song.
Mercedes, I think, was the only one to do it.
Right, was the last one, yeah. Yeah. So that's a pretty good precedent.
Yeah, yeah. And they were clear, it's mentioning that on commentary too, where it was like, hey, this is a big, big achievement. And you know, not much really to dive into with Ciampa outside of Kyle Fletcher came out. I think like you should expect of this run to be just him having a series of brilliant matches with great wrestlers in AEW. Defending that title week in and week out in Collision, establishing himself more with the audience. And then he'll lose the belt and probably dive into like some storyline or something like that. That's where I think Ciampa's going to be pretty much for the next couple months. And probably the best case scenario for him, because the more that people get to watch Ciampa wrestle, the more people will enjoy him. And he'll only just continue to resonate with this audience that's very ready for a wrestler like him, I think. Which is pretty cool. As far as other big tentpole moments goes, I'm trying to make sure I pull up my notes here real fast. We did have, we had a couple big matches as well, with, MJF. He is going to be, I think, taking on Brody King this week, but that was a fun interaction. Swerve Strickland and Andrade El Idolo had a great match. Right now, yes, we've talked about this, Matt, throughout the last couple of weeks, but the top of AEW's title scene is like insane right now with how they've done a great job stacking it. And I got to give him credit. Way to slot Andrade into that spot and make him feel very, very important very quickly. What do you think of like how this whole the title picture is like playing out now that we're like seeing it definitively? We're going to get Andrade and Omega more than at Grand Slam. Because I think that one's set, right? Andrade and Omega.
Is that official?
Yeah,
official?
I think it's official. I think it is official. Okay. Because that match was, yes, that match was to, the winner of that match was to take on Kenny at Grand Slam. Kenny. Which, if we remember, when Andrade debuted, the person he attacked was Kenny Omega. So it does feel like they're kind of just wrapping back around to this thing again. Not much really to talk about, but Matt, I just wanted to get your thoughts on just like everything that we've seen this week across AEW for what you've seen.
A lot of good matches. I felt like everything kind of, I thought it was a kind of a holding pattern week a little bit narratively.
Good point.
A lot of really, really good matches, but yeah. Like we're still just kind of like setting things up. Brody and MJF still kind of set him. Now we have the Eliminator, which is going to be this week. We had the setup for, which I'm actually looking forward to. I would love to see maybe, I don't want to say more titles, but I would like to see mixed tag titles. Tony Storm and OC versus the Death Riders in a hair match.
In a hair match.
Versus hair intergender tag match at Grand Slam Australia, which that is a fun one.
They made
one.
Wheeler Yuta's hair the story. Like, it's just so funny. I just thought that was great. What are you going to say, Jake?
Anybody in that is what only one person
it
will
lose. It sounds like
hair?
It's only one person is going to lose their
whoever,
hair. Whoever picks
whoever
it.
Whoever gets pinned.
Yeah. It's not probably, both of them.
Right?
Yeah. So, because like, Marino was looking at him like, oh, it looks like you're cutting your hair off.
Well, not if they win. That's the terrible.
I know, but it was funny because he was the one overreacting, and Marino was just looking at him like, yeah, bitch, I ain't cutting my hair if we lose this match. That's all you, dog. Anyway.
That was cool. We had titles matches. We had the women's title match.
Yeah.
We had the tag title
match.
Great
match, too.
We
Holy
had the
crap.
Women's tag title match.
Yeah.
All good matches, but it was all just kind of like, that's what I mean. Like, there was not a ton of. Like huge developments, a lot of big title matches.
Yeah. And then Ciampa, which was like the
and
biggest
then,
thing.
And another title match.
Yeah. And another title match. Yeah. Jake, sorry. What were we going to say?
I'd love to know if our listeners have any great ideas for names for the tag team of Tony Storm and Orange Cassidy. Because the best one that I have seen is Pulp Vixen.
Oh my god.
That's the best one that I've seen.
That is actually an incredible one. Holy moly.
Yeah. You think you can beat that?
If you can beat that, yes.
On this episode.
Yeah, actually let us know your best tag team name. And hell, give us one if you're feeling frisky for Wheeler Yuta and Marina Shafir. Look, I know they're Death Riders, but that doesn't mean that they can't have their own team. Let's not forget the New Age Outlaws were a team within the Generation
within
X.
Within the team, yeah.
So, you know, just there's precedence there. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. It's some pretty cool stuff. But yeah, this week's going to be fun. We have MJF versus Brody King for the Eliminator title match. I'm curious to see what happens there. It's a very clear push for Brody, which is awesome. People love him, so this is like a great kind of tone setter for him, and then we'll see where he goes from there, because let's not forget he's had banger matches with Okada for the Continental. He's had banger matches with Takeshita for the International, so this is all, you know, I think part of them just continuing to build up you know, a future star in Brody King that they really believe in. Swerve Strickland as well, continues to be incredible. Seems like there's going to be some beef there with him and Kenny Omega and Andrade. Let's not forget that. So, Maybe we find Swerve Strickland is not pleased with Andrade's shenanigans at the end of that matchup and wants some kind of revenge. So I think we'll be looking out for that as well, because he did hit him with the low blow, I believe it was, when the ref wasn't looking. So, you know, there's all that in there. And then there's some more Don Callis stuff too. Actually, I do want to point out just one, if there's one thing I would encourage people to go check out, it's this story that's developing between the Don Callis family and the Death Riders that I'm very much enjoying, because both factions are in this turf war right now where they're trying to show who's the toughest one. And the Don Callis family, they're been cutting these promos where Josh Alexander is like a psychopath yelling at a at the camera while the rest of the team beating up a bunch of jobbers. And then you have Jon Moxley who comes out and says, you don't want any of this. You don't understand, like, what we do and what you do are two completely different things. And they've already established this, but yet the thread keeps pulling. Jake, I have a feeling, and I want to see if you agree with me, that this is going to a Death Riders Don Callis family anarchy in the arena.
Oh, I could see that. I definitely was just thinking, when are they going to combine to become the Don Riders?
Or Jesus Christ.
No, I think
both
that's
so
ice.
Big.
I'm pretty sure that's
or the,
ice.
Or the Death Callis family.
Death Callis family, which actually sounds like, oh my God, like get that taken care of if you have a death callus on your body. Okay?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You don't want that.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it sounds like, right? Like, I feels like we're going an anarchy in the arena, you know?
Yeah, that
makes sense.
Yeah, maybe a revolution?
The last one was at Double or Nothing, but we still have Revolution, Dynasty?
And Anarchy in the Arena is not attached to any paper,
pay-per-view. That's true.
So I think that's what helps them to be able to kind of plop it in. Yeah.
It's getting close to a year since the last one, so
it would
stand to reason.
Yeah, and also, too, a little fun side note, Rascals already found themselves in a parking lot brawl. They just happened to be walking around and were asked, hey, we kind of need some help. It was Eddie Kingston and Ortiz were just like, listen, we don't like these dudes. You want to help us beat them up? And then they were like, let's do it. And then they went and did it. So it'll be a fun episode of Dynamite. Very much looking forward to it. Should be a good time. Good wrestling across the board. Raw was pretty damn good yesterday, too. I didn't get a chance to watch it fully, but the Raquel Rodriguez-Stephanie Vaquer matchup was also great. Lots of fun storyline implications coming out of that with Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah. The tension there is
Jake, where do we thick. Think that's going real fast? Where is that going?
Well, what I thought at first where it could go was Raquel wins last night and Liv picks her to fight at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
That's what I thought it was going to go to. But something tells me that I think they're going to be in some kind of match at WrestleMania. It might be a triple threat. That's kind of where I'm thinking it may end up going.
You know, a triple threat with Stephanie Vaquer as kind of like the third party of it all,
right,
isn't actually that bad. It does feel a little bit like you're running back the story with Bianca and Io and Rhea, but there is a much better element here with the Judgment Day kind of looming, you know, in the distance. I think that's cool. Matt,
I think we may be seeing the end of the Judgment Day altogether.
Yeah.
Is what it's starting to seem like.
We've been saying that for years.
Yeah. Well, I know, but think about with everything going on with Finn seems like he's wanting to break off onto his own. Raquel and Liv are having these issues. So
Roxanne really doesn't need to be in that group right now, and I'd much rather her be fighting for the U.S. title or the Intercontinental title. I think that's a much better position for the Prodigy to sit in. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that's like exactly what you would want someone of her caliber to be. And then, you know, you also have like the Dom and Liv story, which doesn't really need the Judgment Day anymore because it's been going on for so long.
I don't know if we saw 100% resolution of everything between him and Liv either.
No, even though she's just slapping him
from
now,
while
right?
she was gone.
That's all she's doing. I guess that's one way to express your love. But yeah, so anyway, there's a, like, it's been great, and there's a lot of fun stuff. So this is a fun week of wrestling. We already started off great with Monday Night Raw. Wednesday's Dynamite's going to be great. Tuesday, of course, you have NXT. Don't forget TNA, AMC for some Impact Saturday, Impact Thursday night, excuse me, and then Collision. And SmackDown. Man, just so many good shows. So many good shows.
Nonstop,
baby. As we all know, this is the end of the show. And at the end of the show, what do we do? It's the Reebok 24/7 Champion of the Week. This, of course, is where we award the person, place, or thing that brought us the most joy this week. And listen, there's a lot of, we need joy. Because good Lord. Man, them files. Oh, boy. So I'm going to start first, and I'm going to have some fun with this one because it's a game that I've been talking about, and everyone has been annoyed with me by how much I've been talking about it, and it's High Guard, and everyone needs to go play High Guard, and it's incredible, and it's a super fun game. And if you have any questions and you're very confused about how the game works, just message me, and I'll explain it to you. It's super fun. Please play because I want to beat people up, okay, because I'm kind of a beast at the game. And I'm nasty, bro. Like I'm turning the clock back. Like I'm out there. I'm just dropping bodies in the server, man. It is not even like my brain is on an, my brain is operating at like such an expanded capacity that when I'm like in the game, I'm thinking about 5D chess. I've already skipped 4. Like that's how crazy I am right now.
Wow.
I'm so far out there. Just check out my stream. I'm a beast. And I'm humble. More importantly.
That's important. That's what's important. Yeah.
All right. Who wants to go next?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jake, you got one?
I'll go. Fallout on Prime is great.
Oh, yeah.
I'm caught up on season 2 of Fallout. Yep. The premiere or the season finale actually comes out tonight as we're recording this.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, in about 5 hours from what I recall, it's so good.
Yeah.
And I am constantly impressed with the reverence to which they hold the source material, how seriously they all take it. Walton Goggins is so good, and he gets the material without ever having played the game. Like I've watched interviews where he talks about, like, you know, the wild thing about this universe is that everybody from some perspective is right. And how difficult and complicated that makes things. And, you know, really talks about the line that was in the show. Everybody wants to save the world. They just can't agree on how to do it. And they have made an already rich expanse world even richer. I'm loving seeing the stuff of what happened before the bombs drop, the story they've made with these characters and where things are going. It's great.
Don't
television.
Be mad at me. I haven't watched it.
Uh-huh.
I have to, but because I watched like the first episode or two and I was like, oh, it's just like more dystopian, like everything sucks and everyone's dead and it's always the same thing. But everyone's told me how excellent of a show it is.
Yeah.
And it's like that and Twisted Metal. It's like those two shows are.
Twisted Metal is also a banger.
But because they're both very similar in their theming, but like obviously very different in what they do. And yet I was like giving a pass to that. And then I was watching Twisted Metal and I'm like, let me not be an idiot. I got to watch Fallout. So I will be doing a Fallout watch.
I'm telling you, I have a buddy who's never played Fallout and loves the
show.
Cool.
That's cool. Yeah. I just finished Wonder Man. So I need something else.
I've heard good things about that too.
And Wonder Man would have been my winner this week if it wasn't for High Guard.
Not for High Guard.
But Wonder Man is worth your time very much. So Fallout. Okay. Love it. Matt, Fallout. What's yours?
Ooh, so good.
Well, Jake, thanks for that setup. Thanks for the opening act. I appreciate it because that is the perfect segue into my presumptive 24/7 champion of the week because I'm going all the way into the deep dark net here. I've been huffing the copium all week long. I'm going to go along with some of the trolls on the internet, and I'm going to hope that my 24/7 champion, when this release is on Wednesday, is Bethesda Gameworks, because they dropped Fallout 3 remastered as soon as the episode airs, as soon as the finale.
Wait, is that a rumor?
Yes, there's a rumor that they have been shadow developing a Fallout 3 remake and a Fallout New Vegas remake.
I've heard that New Vegas is less likely, but Fallout 3, because Vegas was Obsidian.
Yeah. Right,
But they did, they did Shadow Drop Oblivion last year. Yeah. The remake of Oblivion.
And that game was so good. I'm still playing it. It's
and the
so
people
fun.
Who worked on the Oblivion remake retweeted something today about, congrats to our friends at Bethesda on the finale tonight or whatever. Come on, give it.
They worked on a bunch of Cyberpunk stuff too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I just started playing for the first time while I was at home.
How good is it?
Brother, I'm hooked.
I'm working through a Nomad run right now, and
it's so good. I started out Street Kid. That's what I started out.
Just don't go meet Hanako. Okay, once you got it.
Rumor
has it. She's still waiting.
She's still waiting at Embers. Just don't meet Hanukkah. That's where I'm at right now. I'm just like, maybe I just go.
It keeps telling me after
thing.
Everything. Yeah, after, and then I was gonna do that too, and then it was like, nope, this is the point of no return. Yeah, and I was like,
wait.
No, don't want to do that.
Gotta go and do some more gigs and kill some cyber psychos.
That game is incredible.
It's phenomenal, man. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, I've been playing it on my Steam Deck. And it's really fun. Because so many people have built and optimized that game. It's crazy where it started and now where it's at. It is like No Man's Sky to an extent, but I would say, I would argue No Man's Sky was a better story, but for this one, it really is impressive how just like the entirety of the games industry just realized like how much of a mammoth this game was. And how great this would be for benchmarks. So everyone was like, let's actually start developing our benchmarks around this game, because this game is like the next Crysis. Yeah, it's the next Crysis or the next Far Cry or, whatever the case may be, or the next Half-Life. So, really cool stuff. Let's give it to the Cope.
Let's give it to the Cope.
Okay, because if it happens,
one for each. I want both of them.
That's the only Fallout game I finished, so I would be very, very thrilled to play
Fallout
that one again.
Fallout 3 is the one that hooked me.
That game was the it was the one where I was like, oh my god, Bethesda's a god tier dev. Get me wrong, Elder Scrolls. I've been playing Morrowind. I played Oblivion and all that, but. Something about when they did Fallout, I was just like, this game is something magical. And
Liam Neeson, was your dad.
That's right. Yeah. He was your freaking dad. And what's his face? I forget his name. The voice of War. War never changes or something that.
Oh, yeah.
Ron Perlman. Who, funny enough, saw him on a flight, actually. A few weeks ago. Yeah, he's older. I didn't know he was like in his.
I thought you were gonna say Fredo from.
no, that'd be crazy. Yeah. Oh yeah. Man. All right, guys. Anyway. Well, that is gonna do it for us here. We appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in. Of course, good to have the gang back together. We're pumped to continue to bring these episodes to you guys. So make sure you get out there, support it, let people know what's going on with this channel. This doesn't work unless you guys are out there watching it and supporting what we do. If you happen to enjoy our discussions, you can keep the conversation going on Discord. You can find a link for that in the description down below. And of course, if you want some more Rebook action in your life, you can go ahead and check out www.rebookpod.com. For myself, Matt, and Jake, we thank you all so much. Shout out to Scan, our editor. We will see you guys next week. Peace out.